Okay, so this topic of halachot related to flying to the moon doesn't seem so far from us. As this past year, we finished this past year, and a number of spaceships were sent up into outer space for some thrills. So it doesn't seem that far off. That's possible. There will be a day where we will be on the moon and maybe staying overnight, and days and weeks and months. Who knows what's going to be there? But it is a very fun topic, and it's related to this week's parsha coming up, Chodesh Hazeh Lachem. We start talking about the new moon. So let's talk about some halachas related to the new moon. Now, before I talk about going on the moon, let's just discuss the interesting survey of different places in Shas and Chazal. We find very unique modes of transportation, advanced modes of transportation, unconventional ways of traveling. So let's start off with an interesting number one here. It's not in front of you. I just have the title of the Tferes Yehonasan in Parshas Noach. I should say Parshas Noach there. That's with Yonasan Aipshitz. Yonasan Aipshitz, aside from being an incredible Eloi, an incredible tzaddik and Talmud Chacham, he was also very well versed in various sciences and history and other subjects. Is actually a funny Meiser Weimer go and share with me. The Meiser goes that he was very close with the king. Wherever he lived, he was very close, and he oftentimes would go for a little stroll in the garden of the palace. And one day they were walking along the way, and the king stopped for a second and asked for Yonasan Aipshitz the following question. He says to him, or asks him, are you allowed to give a bracha to a non-Jew? So it's a part of a complicated, so the answer is you're not allowed to give a bracha to a non-Jew unless there's a reason, unless there's a relationship, unless it's kavod hamalchus. So he says, yes, you're allowed to, because he expected, the king wanted to ask for a bracha himself. So he says, yeah, I'm allowed to give a bracha to a non-Jew. So he says to him, okay, points over to a statue of Yashka and says, could you give him a bracha? He says, I would, but you need to know the father's name to give a bracha. So Yonasan Aipshitz is very sharp. He was a very wise individual. So Rav Yonasan Aipshitz had the following chiddush he wrote. In Parsha Noach, it's found. He describes the teva on which Noach went, and he also describes the Migdal Bavel. Yeah.
What's the difference between that and giving your bracha to the government?
It's a similar thing. That normally you can't give bracha, you can't give a free gift to a non-Jew, but if there's a reason, whether it's because of the malchus, because of the hakar satov, you have to live in their government, or to a relationship you have with a non-Jew, or the king, then there certainly are heterim for giving brachas and giving gifts. So either way, Yonasan Aipshitz is mechadish the following. Unclear exactly what he means, but he's describing the teva that Noach and his family were in. He says that teva was some type of submarine. It wasn't just like a boat floating, it was some submarine that was going on there. Then he used this to discuss Migdal Bava. Now, if you pay attention to Migdal Bava, he says they're trying to build a huge building. Imagine NASA's building this big spaceship. They're building a building, and they're trying to fight Hashem. They knew Hashem wasn't 100 feet up in the air. What were they trying to accomplish? They're trying to build a spaceship, he writes. They're trying to build a spaceship, and, a tower that is going to shoot up to Shemayim and somehow attack God. That was what they're trying to create. So this concept of building a spaceship, it's new, but it's, it was perhaps, according to Yonasan Aipshitz, this was really the ideas of those building Migdal Bavel. So this is the first instance where we see a very creative idea of building unconventional modes of transportation. Now take a look at number two. We're going to go through another type of transportation found in the Gemara in Makos and also in the Gemara in Yevamos. The Gemara in Makos is talking about a very different topic. We're going to just use this to discuss a flying camel. What does that mean? So Amar Rava. Rava says the following. Bo Ishnaim. Two people come. Vamru, and they say, Besura b'tzafra b'chad b'shabas. That means in Surah, the area of Surah. In the morning, on a Sunday morning like now, Harig Plonius Nefesh. Two Edom testify that Reuven killed Shimon in Surah Sunday morning. Ubo Shnaim, two other Edom come. This is the case of Edom Zomim. Vamru, Bifania, in the evening, Bechab Shabbos, a Sunday evening, Imanu Hayisim. You were with us in Naharda, a very distant place from Surah. How could it be that you were in that place in the morning at 9 a.m. and with us at 5 p.m. in a different location from California to New York? Is it possible to travel that distance? So the Gemara says, well, let's see, Chazina, let's take a look. If from morning to evening, Matzi Azil Misur Harda, the distance from Surah to Harda is within the distance of morning to evening. It could take you 8 hours to get there, and that's within reason. So then, Lahavi Zoman, they're not Adim Zoman. There's no contradiction. Yes, they witnessed the murder Sunday morning in one city, and they were seen by Adim in another city later. As long as within reason that's acceptable, no Adim Zoman. But V'ilav, if you're not able to travel from Surah to Naharda in that time period, Havi Zomim, those first Edom are Edom Zomim, and will get the punishment that they tried giving the Reuven. Was it Pshita?
Don't witnesses have to experience seeing exactly what happened?
No, that's the Shiloh. They're saying they're lying. They were not. It's possible to see that if you're with us in that city, you didn't see it. You're liars. You're Edom's omen. So I said, Pshita, that's a very obvious point. Of course, if Edom saw them in California in the evening and they couldn't be in New York in the morning, of course they're Edom's omen. What's the chiddush? Says the Gemara, Maud the same. What would you have thought? Leichush legamla kracha. Maybe there was a flying camel. They were on flying camels. They had to go from one end to the other end. And Kamashbalan were not choshesh of flying camels. Now, although the Gemara in Makos is not concerned with a flying camel, the Gemara in Yevamos is concerned and thinks it's a real possibility of flying camels. What's the case there in Gemara in Yevamos number 3 here? The Gemara Yevamos daf kuf tezayin amar alf has the following case. The Gemara is talking about a get that gets lost. So let's read the Gemara a little bit. Hahu gita dishtakach besur. They found the get that was in this area of Sur. Uksib Behachi, it says the following, it found in the get, it said, Besura Masa, in this area of Sura. Anan I, my name is Anan Barchia Naharda. In Naharda, I patris tarchis plonis anhalatsia, which means I divorced my wife in Naharda. Ubadko virabanan, they inspected, they did a heavy research, Misurva Naharda, from the cities of Sura to Naharda. Naharda is where the get said it was written, and Sura is where they found this get. Lohava Anan Barchia. There's no one by the name of Anan Barchia, Achrina, none other than Bar, except for the one that's Anan Barchia, Michagra, from a city which is in the area of Naharda. There's only one person with that name between the areas of Naharda Sur. V'asa Sadin, the witnesses said, Amr, the Hu Yoma, that day, Ki'icht of Hahu Geta, when that get was written, because it says a date on the get, the date that was said in that get, Anan Barchia, Michagra, Gabonhava. He was with us. He wasn't in that location. He wasn't in Naharda. He was with us elsewhere. So the Gemara gets a little confusing here. But the Gemara says, if it's possible, the last line, the Gemara says, "Begamla parch azil." It's possible he traveled from Naharda to Sura with a flying camel. The Gemara says it's a real possibility, a flying camel. Inami bekvitza. We'll get to what kvitza is in just a moment. He jumped really far. Or inami mili maser, which means shlichas. But the Gemara here entertains the possibility he was on a flying camel. So the Gemara Mako says we're not choshish for flying camels, and the Gemara Yevamo says we are choshish for flying camels. Tosas says different answers when we are, when we aren't. A few answers in Rishonim. That is interesting, but these were the most, it's like New York, yeah, exactly, New York City and Yerushalayim. Like, that's what I'd imagine, yeah. So they're two big areas. That's likely that would be great examples to use. So either way, there are sometimes we are concerned with flying camels and sometimes not. So we get very excited about a flying camel. Rashi says, don't get so excited, guys. Look at number 5. It sounds exciting. Rashi says, it's really a min gamal. It's a type of camel. Yeshem, Kalam, they're very fast. They run very fast. Kof, Haparech, like as fast as birds fly. That's how fast they run. They're not really flying camels. So we got excited, but nothing to really get excited about. But what's really exciting is this Gemara, when it says that there's such a thing called kvitza. Kvitza means to jump. To jump. This week's parsha, we're going to read about kvitza when it comes to Pesach, Posech, HaKadosh Baruch Hu jumps over. Rashi means kvitza. Hashem jumped from one house to another house when it came to Makos Becharos. What does kvitza mean? So I'm sure you're familiar with the Amora, who comes up pretty often in Gemara. His name is Avua de Shmuel. Avua de Shmuel, the father of Shmuel. Doesn't he have his own name? Why is he called Avua de Shmuel? So it could be that his son Shmuel was greater than himself, and therefore they called him based on his son's name, Avua de Shmuel. I'm sure any parent would be very, very honored to be called after their son. They have a lot of nachas when their sons, become great people, and I'm known as the father of so-and-so. So that's simple pshat of why he's called Avua de Shmuel. But the Tosfos in Kedushin, Daf Ayin Gimel, tells us a Yerushalmi, a different reason why he's called Avu de Shmuel. The father of Shmuel, Avu de Shmuel, was traveling overseas. And Avu de Shmuel's wife became pregnant with who would eventually be Shmuel, but Avu de Shmuel wasn't to be found. He was overseas for a few years. And then people started saying that his wife was Mazana, that Shmuel's father was, Shmuel's mother was Mazana with someone else, and he's not the product of his parents. It became a terrible thing. So Yerushalmi says, Avu de Shmuel was such a tzaddik. Yes, he was overseas. But look what the Yerushalmi says. Look at number 6. Number 6 says Tosfos. Ki ahu uvda. It's in Yerushalmi. There's a certain maisa, de Avu de Shmuel, Shehalach l'medina sayam, reading just the bold, he traveled overseas. Uba ayde shem, he was able to return back ayde shem, which means he said shem Hashem. He knew the special shem was Hashem, how to travel from Nahardat, the Surah, wherever he was traveling from. V'holodes Shmuel, and he was, of course, the father of Shmuel. So lest anybody think otherwise, his name became Avuah de Shmuel. Don't contest who his father was. His father was Avuah de Shmuel. It was him. He was overseas. Avuah de Shmuel knew how to use Shemos Hashem. And that's another unconventional way of travel that appears in the Gemara. Okay, so the fun topics of spaceships, the Migdal Bavel, and flying camels, and Shemos Hashem, and Kvita through that. But it really seems it's a possibility not too far ahead that we will be traveling to the moon. I don't know if I would ever do this, but people are going to outer space, as we know. So what are some halachas that will relate to flying on the moon? So let's go through some halachas. There's a fascinating sefer called Otzer Plo Satorah. I highly recommend it. He has interesting stuff on the Agatas of Chumash, interesting stuff on the halachas of Chumash. Fantastic sefer. They have only through Sefer Bamidbar. They don't have Sefer Dvarim just yet, but it's really interesting stuff. So let's talk about some of the topics he raises. Number one. Is it even allowed? Can one travel to the moon? Is that allowed? Is there a sakana involved in traveling to the moon? So take a look at the last marmakum on the first page, or number 7. Rav Menashe Klein writes, "Bedavar she'laso, with regard to the question you asked me, imuter liyisrael la'alos al halavana, is it permitted for a Jew to travel to the moon?" I think there was an Israeli astronaut who traveled to the moon. "V'gam imuter l'kadsha b'sha shebnei adam aleha," is there an inyan of kiddush levana we'll get to as well? Doesn't make a difference where you are when you say Kiddush Levana. You could be in this earth or you could be on the moon. We'll get to some more shahs about Kiddush Levana in just a moment. But in terms of the heter of traveling to the moon, is that allowed? Can you even go in a spaceship to outer space, let's say? Rav Menashe Klein believes it's forbidden for a person to travel to the moon. Why? Mitrei taima. He thinks there are two different reasons why it's usher to travel to the moon. Number one, chada. Have a makom sakana. It's a place of danger. V'usher lahachnis atzmo b'makom sakana. It's forbidden to put yourself in a position of danger. We'll discuss the details in just a moment. V'hasama have a makom sakana. And the moon is a place that's dangerous for two reasons. Betray time. You know why it's usher for two reasons? Why it's dangerous for two reasons? Chada ha'aliyah, the travel up to space. That's dangerous. There have been spaceships that have, you know, it burnt on the way up. It's dangerous. Number two, Ashenis, Hashia Sham, to stay there overnight for days, for weeks, for months. Sham Ein Sham Aver, there's no oxygen. The Roy Labalcha, you need to live with oxygen. So he says it's usher to go on the moon for those two reasons. The trip up is dangerous, and to stay there is dangerous as well. So now, the challenge, of course, is a few. Number one is, an airplane also, the travel is dangerous. You have to look at statistics, which is more dangerous. We discussed bungee jumping, flying out of a plane. We discussed early in this man, could a person jump out of a plane? Is that permitted? So it depends. What are statistics? Are certain things inherently dangerous, even though statistics are really in favor, or not? So he might assume that there's certain activities that are dangerous by nature, although statistics don't indicate that, but certain things are dangerous. I think jumping out of a plane is incredibly dangerous. You're going to show me statistics that it's not that way, but I would never jump out of the plane. One is I'm just scared. Number two is I just think it's dangerous. But there's what to talk about, whether that's, how do you define danger? Is it statistics or is it based on what's inherently danger? That's number one. Number two is, it's a hard thing to suggest that just because there's no oxygen, a person can't go there. Because then you could start suggesting maybe you shouldn't go in a submarine either. You shouldn't go snorkeling. You shouldn't go scuba diving. Maybe the answer should be yes, that should be us as well. I don't know. But then you have to start ushering anywhere where there's low levels of oxygen. An airplane. If there's no airplane and you have the oxygen in the air, to my understanding, there's very little oxygen up where 10,000 feet up in the air. I don't know if a person could live for that long for a period of time, you know, whatever oxygen is available up there. I don't know the matias of all these things, but if a person has the food, a person has the oxygen tanks to keep him for several weeks, months, I don't know if that would necessarily make it usher. So it's unclear whether others would agree to Rav Menashe Klein that it really would be usher to go there. But that's his thought. He thought it was usher. Now, the mechaber of the Sefer itself of Otzer Plo Satorah thinks that there might be another reason why it should be usher to fly to the moon. Not because of danger. Take a look at the other side of this page, or number 8. Here, the Mishnah Berurah is talking about when you look up at the moon for Kiddush Levana. You're supposed to say the bracha. You need to see the moon to say a bracha. Now, there's a discussion in the posting whether or not you should be davening towards the moon or away from the moon. Many do not daven to say the bracha towards the moon, it looks like you're worshipping the moon. So many have the custom to turn away. Not everybody has such a custom. Here in the shul, it seems that the people daven towards the moon. Many other places turn away a bit from the moon when they say the bracha. But what about looking at the moon? Is there a problem to look at the moon itself, other than the initial ri'ya, but histaklis? Are you allowed to stare at the moon? So Mishnah Berurah brings down a machlokas, whether you're allowed to stare at the moon. And he writes, Kasev b'shirik kneses gadola. The mashma l'chor, it appears at first glance, d'ad gemar kol seder, until you finish the whole seder of the bracha and the tefillah of Kiddush Levana, tola einav ba. You're watching it the whole time. Your eyes are stuck to the moon. V'chei nog alma. That seems to be the practice amongst the minhag olam, is to look at the moon while you're saying the seder tefillah. Aval shama mishem svar sefer haredim. I heard in the name of the sefer haredim, shehichmir bizemod. He's very machmir in this regard. Milistakel bilavana. You should not stare at the moon. You should only look at it until you've completed the bracha, but don't look the rest of the time. And the Magen Avraham writes further, b'shem ashla, hichmir od, he's even more machmir, od yoser dafil b'shasa bracha, ein lalastak abo, ela roso pamachat. Look at it, take a glance at it, and then look down at the sitter and say the bracha, but don't look at it during the bracha. So there are three opinions. One is, you stare at the moon the entire time from the beginning of the bracha until aleinu. The second opinion is just for the bracha, not more than that. And the Shla says just at, glance at it, and then not even for the bracha. So there's an isser, possibly an isser, to look at the moon.
What's the source of this?
So there's always a source. The Shla is the source of this. The reason behind it is something deeper going on, having to perhaps with the moon and the sun fighting with each other. Perhaps it has something to do, it looks like you're worshipping it. But they don't explain a tam, a reason behind it. Whatever the reason is, there is a discussion whether it's also to look at it. So the Mechaber of Otzer Plav Satora says, if that's the case, if you can't look at the moon, so then how are you able to be on the moon and stand the moon if you're going to be looking at the moon? So that's perhaps another reason why it might be also actually to travel to the moon. Now, I don't know if people are aware of this issue. I don't know how widely practiced it is. People look at the moon all the time. There's a nice big moon, an orange moon. It's low down. People look at it all the time. I don't know if people are familiar with it. Doesn't mean it's allowed, but again, it's subject to a machlokas, and that's just another angle to look at whether or not you can even travel to the moon. But the next question is as follows. Okay, so let's say you can go to the moon. So what would the halacha be? There's a discussion whether or not a person who's blind, a suma, could say bracha on Kiddush Levana. Now, at first glance, you would say a suma should not say bracha on Kiddush Levana because he can't get hana from it. He doesn't, he can't get the moonlight, he doesn't appreciate it. And for that reason, he shouldn't be able to say the bracha of Kiddush Levana. So he writes as follows. He quotes from a sefer. There's a sefer called Tsuras HaLevana. And this sefer says as follows. I'm quoting here. The mistaber makes sense that a suma can say bracha, Kiddush Levana. He says, even according to his opinions who hold that a suma may not say bracha, Kiddush Levana when down here on earth because they can't get hana from it, some say they actually can say the bracha, the suma. You know why? Because they do get hana. Why do they get hana? Because although they can't see, but if they're walking in the street and a other person says, watch out, there's a rock there, so he'll at least get hana from someone else blocking him from tripping over that rock or falling into that ditch. So there is some hana he does get indirectly from the moon. So some say a suma may say a bracha down here on earth, but some say he can't because he doesn't get direct hana. But this sefer, Tzuras HaLevana, says that's only true when you're in this, down here on earth, does one not say bracha of Kiddush Levana when he's a suma. But when you're standing on the moon itself, where, again, you know, I don't know how standing works exactly. You float, there's no gravity, but whatever, you're somehow on the moon, you're getting somehow not by being attached to the moon and not floating out to outer space. There he contends that there is direct hana for the suma, although the hana is not one that he sees, but one that he feels and experiences, then he thinks that there can be a bracha. He should say a bracha on Kiddush Levana if he's up on the moon at that time. That's his suggestion. Now, again, I don't know if this is so true. You're not really standing on the moon. You're like floating off of it. I don't know what type, you're attached to the base of the aircraft. That's why you're not floating around, not necessarily to the moon. But again, that's the suggestion he makes that one would say this. Now, furthermore, he actually points out in a footnote from a grandson of his, very, very sharp point, he says. So when one says Kiddush Levana on the moon, make sure not to say the following words that we say in the normal Seder Tefillah. It says, Kishem Shani Roke Kenegdich Ve'eni Yachal Lengoa Bach. I can't dance on you, I can't touch you. Well, Taka, the guy can. The guy is standing on the moon, he's dancing. So those words he should actually not say in the Nusach HaTefillah. That's just his suggestion.
But
what? I'm not sure, actually. I don't know. It sounds like, I don't know. Unclear. Again, if that would be the case, then maybe that, then that, obviously that would, but to Dan, yeah, it could be. I'm not sure.
Does he have to face down when he's standing on the moon?
Face down? I guess so, yeah. I mean, perhaps he should be looking at the moon, at least for that first initial glance. Now, the other question he raises here in terms of Kish Levana is there a Zman of Kish Levana? Down here on Earth, so it's from the third day, there's a machlokas when a person should start saying it. There's a machlokas between the Rambam and the Rashi. Do you start saying Kish Levana on day one of Rosh Chodesh? Could you say it at that early or day three? Now, the simple machlokas, the understanding is, we've discussed this a couple years ago probably, I discussed it in shul, that there's a machlokas we show on what the nature of Kiddush Levana is. Is Kiddush Levana a birchas hanenin, whereby I need to get hana from it to say the bracha, or it's a birchas shevach voda, where I'm thanking Hashem for the new moon? So the nafkamin is, what's the first day? Day one, the moon is so small, you can't get hana from it. So the Rashi says, you could still say bracha, because it's not about hana, it's about seeing a new moon. But the other opinions who felt that the Kiddush Levana is a bracha of hana, you have to wait for it to have 3 days, which is a little bit bigger, where I can get hana. So that's a machlokas that exists. There are a number of nafkaminas to this. So now the din is, you could start counting from day three. That's how we paskin. Others say day seven, but most say day three. Day seven is actually based on Kabbalah. There's a sefer called the Shari Ora. Shari Ora is a very important sefer in Kabbalah. It's brought down, the Gra says, if one wants to learn a Kabbalah, he should start with Shari Ora. Talks about all the different spheros. To my recollection, this is the only place in all of Shulchan Aruch that it's actually quoted the halacha, that the Shari Orah says you wait 7 days based on the seven lower spheros, from Chesed down to Malchus, Chesed in Gura and so on, down to Malchus, you wait 7 days before saying Kish Levana. So that's a Yesha Omer brought down by the Beis Yosef, the Shulchan Aruch, the Shari Orah. Fascinating, that's the only place he brings this to my understanding. Either way, we paskin from day three, and you have up until around day 14, day 15, until halfway through. When it's a full moon, it starts now going down, you can no longer say Kiddush Levana. But let's say I'm on the moon itself. So I see the moon, I don't need to see a little sliver or it's going down. I'm on the moon, I see it in its full capacity. Maybe there should not be any time limit to saying the bracha of Kiddush Levana. That's the discussion he next discusses here.
Maybe you can never say
Kiddush
Levana, you see it all the time. It's never...
it's no Kiddush. It could be also. Yeah, very good. So he suggests this. He has this Shaila. And he says in the end, Mistaver Lomer, it makes sense to say, as you said, you can't make any bracha on the moon. That which we say bracha, mishim shelavana b'chidusha, it's new to me down here on earth, but I'm on the moon, it's not new to me anymore. I don't recognize its newness. She meira sham tamar, it's always giving light. It's not always true, because it depends where it is relative to the sun. But okay, either way, you're on the moon, and you have a little flashlight to lighting up for you. Somehow it's not going to be new to you, and therefore it doesn't warrant a new bracha. Let's do one last shaila. Well, that'll be a short shiur today, I guess. One last shaila comes up. He refers to what he writes elsewhere in Parshas Metzora to a fascinating discussion about a mikvah on the moon. Is a mikvah kosher on the moon? Now, the first problem is there's no water on the moon. It doesn't rain on the moon. There's no water in the moon, no rivers, there's no lakes that they have discovered. There's no water. How do you get the water there in the first place? So the problem with getting water to the moon is that there's something called Mayim Shuvim. There are two kosher mikvahs in general. Either you have rainwater, and rainwater is only kosher if it drops and falls in its place. You cannot transport rainwater. The second issue, the second option is a spring that's overflowing that can move. It's a river with a spring, that's a kosher mikvah. So here in America, at least in the New York area, it's very hard to find a spring. I believe in Tenafly, there might be actually a Chabad mikvah, which has a spring, a Mayan, which is very rare in this area. But most mikvahs are built by rain. So what happens is you have a mikvah, you have to leave the roof over, open, and it rains in the bore, and then the rain stays there. And then the mikvah that we go in is not actually the bore where the rain collected, but you have through a shaka, which is pipes. You have pipes connecting the initial bore of rainwater to new water that's pumped in, and that's how we have a mikvah. But you can't transport rainwater elsewhere. So what do you do like in a place like Arizona? So I asked my kids first. I raised a shiloh on Shabbos. How do you think to get a mikveh on the moon? So one of them suggested, well, just like you could fly to the moon, maybe they could get some clouds to go to the moon as well and have it rain in the moon. Okay, that was an interesting suggestion. But how do you build a mikveh in Phoenix, Arizona? Does it rain in Phoenix, Arizona? There are no water springs there. How do you get a mikveh there? They have mikvehs there. So you know what the answer is? They actually have ice. You can transport ice. Mayim Shuvim, water, rainwater that's pasul, it's pasul for mikvah, it's only when you put it into buckets or kelim, and now you transport it. But let's say you have the rainwater and you somehow freeze it. It turns into ice now. And you don't put it into a bucket. You leave it as ice. You place it on like a flat bed. So nothing's holding it. No kli's holding it. It doesn't get pasul. So they actually transport blocks of ice or whatever amount of ice in a truck. That's a freezer truck. And without any kli holding, it's on flat bed. And then they bring it to Arizona, drop in a mikvah, and it melts. And now you have your rainwater. That's how they create. So in theory, you could do the same thing on the moon. You could have ice transported to the moon through a spaceship and dig a bore there, drop the ice, and let it melt. I think it's pretty cold there, so I don't know how the melting works. But however it's going to work out, you melt it, you blow dryers, you build some type of house where it's a person's warm and you have heat there. So then you have a mikvah. Is that considered a kosher mikvah? So that was a shiloh that was raised. These are fun shilohs, but they were raised to real gedolim. So Rav Zilberstein was asked this question. He quotes from his brother-in-law, Rav Chaim Kanievsky, and he says as follows. He says, based on a fascinating mission in Maseches Kelim, that a mikveh is pasul on the moon. Why? Because there's a din that a mikveh has to be in the ground. You can't have a floating mikveh. Floating mikveh doesn't work. It has to be in the ground. So isn't that in the ground in the moon? Right? Buried in the ground, that's considered a varet. That's considered in the ground, isn't that? So says Rav Chaim Kanievsky, no. There's a mission in Maseches Kelim that tells us as follows. Every day of creation, there is something else that was created that either it was a day where there are items created that subject to Tumah. For example, on Sunday, the Mishnah tells us, on Yom Rishon, there is that which was created on Yom Rishon that can become Tameh, and such as the ground, if you make Kalim out of dirt, that becomes Tameh. And day two, everything created is all Tahor. There's nothing that was created on day two that can become Tameh. Everything is Tahor on day two. Day three, there are things that were created that you can make Kalim that will become Tameh. Day four, everything's Tahor. Day five, the Mishnah actually says, everything is Tahor, but there's a fish or a bird that's Tameh Midrabanan. I'll get to that in just a second. Day six, everything is Tameh. So it's back and forth. It changes. Now, as a side point, the Yid HaKadosh says, based on this Mishnah, that every day that Yom Kippur falls out versus Purim are opposite days. Yom Kippur falls out the days of the week that only things that were Tahor were created. Days one, days three, and day five. And Purim are the opposite days. Everything that something was Tameh was created. That's when Purim could fall out. Day two and day four and day five as well, and day six. Day five is both Yom Kippur and Purim. Why? Yom Kippur is a day that's Kula Kadosh, Kula Tahor, so only falls out on days that things that were created were all Tahor. Purim, the day that's Tameh, but we elevate the Gashmias, so it falls out on days that which were created were Tameh also. Thursday, both Purim and Yom Kippur fall out. So although Midiraisa, everything created is Tahor, but a Midirabanan, there's a type of bird that is Tameh, and since Purim is a Dirabanan, that's a fascinating Yid HaKadosh, parenthetical point. Based on this, says Rav Chaim Kanievsky, since the moon was created on day four, the din is that everything created on day four is Tahor. So that means the moon, the dirt, is Tahor. The person were to fashion a kli out of the dust of the moon, the dirt of the moon, that would not be Tameh. That would be Tahor, as the Mishnah says here as well. So if you build a mikvah in the ground on the moon, that's not called ground. That would not be considered a kosher mikvah. And he said it actually would be possible. So it would be very hard, based on this Rav Chaim, to build a Jewish community on the moon. But for a trip, a vacation, maybe it's still a really interesting possibility. Okay, we'll stop here. I'm not around for the next 3 weeks. I'm out of town. I'm leaving next Sunday morning and going to Florida for a couple weeks. To run a winter kolo. So Mirut Hashem, afterwards, we'll Mirut Hashem pick up on some different topics.
Right. I can see with you there. I'm going to be there too.